say conflicts exist between two desirable movements in business-oriented software development. For a business that wants to be agile, these conflicts must be erased. And they can be because there's no built-in conflict between these movements. The conflict is perceived and can be resolved. All you need is the right mind for it. The two desirable movements are agile software development and business-driven software architecture. Now, many agile proponents feel that the architecture of software is all about technical decisions taken to make the code work as efficiently and reliably as possible, and to make software components easily and safely extendable. There's no need, they say, and certainly no time for preparatory architectural work before user story implementation. Now, a business that wants to be agile should not accept this view. Why shouldn't it? Because it leads to accidental architecture based on many small decisions taken by developers from technical perspectives. That's why the structure of such software won't be aligned to the structure of the business. It'll be software-to-business misalignment. There are ways that are proven in real projects to solve this conflict. I mentioned that in the first episode. Today, I'm going to give you that story. But first, I'll show you a way to dramatically increase the extensibility of services, a way that's totally business-driven, a way that leads to high levels of software-to-business alignment. Now, consider an information service, for example, a finance information service. Make it responsible for the management of financial data such as accounting, budgets, accounts receivable, accounts payable, payrolls, asset management, taxes, and then some. For most developers, the most natural and convenient thing is to have this service expose a generalized API. It's like saying, here it is. If you're authenticated and approved, you can use it. When such a service gets its first consumer, two things can happen. If the API is pre-planned and already implemented, it'll probably have to be modified. It's unlikely that architects and developers have identified every single thing this service needs to expose. If it's not pre-planned, architects and developers can negotiate the API together with business people, hopefully designing an API that makes that first consumer happy. Then comes the second consumer. Does that consumer have the same perspective on financial information as the first one? Highly unlikely. While the first is mostly interested in accounts receivable information, the second is more interested in accounts payable. Therefore, there's a good chance the API will have to be modified to meet both consumers' requirements. There's now a nasty dependency between the sales and the purchasing applications. They don't share each other's perspective on financial information, but they do share the interface. If in the future one of them will need modifications to that interface, the other one is in danger. Architects and developers will have to be very careful so that a modification needed by one of them doesn't kill the other one. Enter the third consumer, the payroll application. Now, this consumer as well is likely to have requirements that the service doesn't yet support. Therefore, again, new modifications are needed. This time it's even more difficult because two other consumers are in danger of being damaged if a modification goes wrong. The dependency between consumers have increased, and it becomes worse. For every consuming application that you add, you multiply the internal dependencies between consumers. The dependency net grows larger and more complex. Furthermore, when each consumer has a different view on the resource shared, which is the typical case with information services, almost every new consumer will require modifications to the API. Existing consumers, too, will require changes to meet new situations in their environment. All of this carries lethal risks for all the other consumers. Then there's this thing called affordance. Good affordance means that it's easy to see how you should use an object. The object should silently speak to you, telling you how to use it. This door is a good example. it's easy to see how it should be pushed from one side and pulled from the other. That's good affordance. Putting the pull handle on the push side and the push plate on the pull side, well, that would be extremely bad affordance. Now, consider this API. Does it offer good affordance to any of its consumers? Given the different perspectives of each kind of consumer, I would say no. Each consumer kind would share some of the operations with other consumer kinds, but each would also have some of its own. Therefore, a large part of the operations offered by this API would be of no interest to most consumers. Instead, these operations would blur everyone's image of how this API could be used. In other words, such an API offers bad affordance. In fact, it offers bad affordance and tight coupling, not to the service, but between consumers. A modification to this API made to please one of them could badly hurt one or more of the others, and that's why they're in it together, tightly coupled to each other. This picture is ugly. It's ugly because it describes an ugly situation. The question is, could we improve it, making it less ugly, describing a less ugly situation? Yes, we can. We can give each consumer kind its own API, one that fits that kind's perspective on the service's resources. That would create an isolation layer between them. Modifications to one of them wouldn't affect consumers of the other APIs, just as long as the implementation of each API still works. OMG has coined two terms to separate these kinds of APIs from each other. They call this kind a contract-based API. It's the result of negotiations between representatives of the service and representatives of the consumer. It's perfect for information services because these services are typically consumed by different kinds of consumers, each with its own perspective of the information managed by that service. OMG talks about this kind in terms of interface-based APIs. Now, they are not primarily based on negotiations between representatives of the service and representatives of the consumers. Instead, the service owner decides how to expose the functionality of this service. Interface-based APIs are not the best kind for information services, at least not when different kinds of consumers have different views on the information such a service holds. However, they are good for most low-level capability services, as for example, this interest calculating service. That's because, in most cases, different kinds of consumers share the same view of these services and what they can do for them. Negotiated APIs help make businesses agile. Say, for example, that the sales process needs to be modified to meet new threats in the marketplace. With negotiated APIs, software architects and developers, well, they won't have to consider the effects certain modification to the sales application's API would have on the other processes. They wouldn't be affected. It can just quickly do what's needed for the sales process and therefore help the business act more quickly in the marketplace. Now that's true business agility. I'd like to say more on this subject, but I haven't got the time right now. I need some time to fulfill my promise about extending the agile approach to include not only code-related development, but also requirement enhancement and architectural design. I promise, however, to do that in the architectural pattern episode. Then I'll also talk about bounded contexts, master data, publication, and subscriptions of changes to master data, and then some more. Let me now, however, start talking about agile requirement enhancement and agile architectural design. This is a typical Scrum board. It consumes user stories and produces applications and services. It takes feedback from consumers of these applications and services, using that feedback to improve matters in later sprints. Now, notice that the user stories coming into a sprint are marked as raw. The idea is this: there's no point in spending time to dig out the details of a user story if you haven't got time to implement it in the current sprint. I mean, after all, a Scrum sprint is a time box, and sometimes it's not possible to implement every story that's planned for the sprint. It's better to leave it raw until it's up for implementation. Now, when working that way, requirements of a later coming user story may be in conflict with the requirements of user stories already implemented. If so, refactoring will remove these conflicts. However, when many decisions are taken from a technical viewpoint rather than a business one, the architecture of the system grows from the inside out rather than from the outside in. It's not planned to help solve business problems and reach business goals. It's planned to solve technical problems. It becomes what it becomes. That's why it's talked about as accidental architecture. You don't want that. You want intentional architecture, architecture that's intended to help reach business goals, solve business problems, and monitor the business. But you can't get that from raw user stories. You need architected user stories, and you want to use an agile approach to get them. Now, for that, you need a separate sub-process that turns raw user stories into architected user stories. If your team is using WCF, these architected user stories would be service, operation, and data contracts. If it's using web API, it would be API controllers and data transfer objects. Now, this pre-development activity is not a BDUF effort. It's purely agile. Architected user stories, contracts, are passed over one at a time, or even better, a few closely related ones at the same time. Now, that's why this feedback loop from the coding team to the architect team, it just makes sense. Developers can get back to the architect to suggest improvements in what's already been passed over, and the architects can take advantage of that feedback when moving on with architectural design. Let's now consider the raw user stories that come into the architectural design board. What is a raw user story? What makes it raw? Well, it means that the details of it aren't yet analyzed. In principle, it may just consist of a sticky note and a sentence that follows the standard template for user story descriptions, just like the example that you're seeing on your screen right now. A user type, sales assistant. A goal, register a sales opportunity. And a reason, so that a salesperson can make a sale. Now, how good is this information for you when trying to put together a coherent business-driven software architecture? Not very good, is it? You need much more to come up with an architecture that makes a difference. The user story should not be raw when it comes to the software architect. It should be enhanced, sharpened. It should describe the real business requirements, the business goals, and business constraints for the user story. And who should see to it that these user stories really are enhanced? Well, the team, of course. The goal should be to transform the usually vague, contradictory, incomplete, and fuzzy requirements that come from the business side into crystal clear, laser-sharp, and well-organized user stories. Then to pass these enhanced user stories over to the architects for architectural design. Now, notice that the code development board is a scrum board and the other two are Kanban boards. This stands to reason because code-related development tends to be divided into sprints, which is a scrum specialty. Feeding development sprints with architected user stories and feeding architects with enhanced user stories is better done in a continuous manner than in sprints. Two questions remain, though. How do these activities relate to each other, and what's the timeline? Let me show you a very simple timeline containing 4 points in time. We've got T1, T2, T3, and TN. Now at T1, requirement processing and enhancement started. It needs to be started first because before this process has produced some results, the architectural process has nothing to do. In a waterfall project, the architectural process would have started around TN when requirement processing is finished and approved. But this is not a waterfall project. It's agile, so the architectural process starts at T2 instead. That's when requirement enhancements has produced its first few enhanced user stories, giving the architects something to do. Requirement analysts will then keep delivering refined and specified user stories to the architects one by one on a continuous basis until all of those in scope have been done. Now, at T3, the first development sprint gets going. Without delay, the architects will start delivering implementable user stories to this sprint. This goes on until all the user stories planned for this sprint are delivered. Now, this is as far from a waterfall process as you can be. Right now, several different things are going on. There's requirement analysis, architectural design, technical design and coding, perhaps even testing has started. This is agile software development on steroids. Then it's the same thing all over again as the different sprints are being deployed. The last sprint starts at TN. The architectural sub-project is finished shortly before the last sprint and the requirement processing just a little bit before that. However, even if these sub-projects are finished before the last sprint, some requirement analyst and some architect must still be available to handle possible feedback and questions from the last sprint. Well, that's it for Episode 2 of the Software Architecture Microsoft Platform mini course, or rather, almost it. As was the case in Episode 1, I have a gift for you in this episode. Just give me another 30 seconds, and I'll bring it to you. This episode has been about agility. It's been about bringing requirement enhancement and architectural design into your agile approach. Doing that will enable you and your team to come up with an intentional architecture for your solution, an architecture that is intended to adapt to the business architecture to expressly help the business reach its goals, solve its problems, and perform relevant monitoring of the business. It's also been about moving from interface-based to contract-based APIs for your information services. That's a move that has an incredibly positive effect on business agility because it'll help the business move faster in the marketplace. In the first episode, Sten made the When There's No Process Model article available to you. Many did download it, and we've received very positive feedback from it. That's why Sten and Per decided to do the same for this episode. The article's name is Software Architecture for Microsoft Azure, a subject that's quite relevant for many. It's only published for a close circle of people, which is now widened to include you as a watcher of this mini course. So enjoy. The URL is on stage right now, and you're welcome to download the article. With that, all that's left for me is to say thank you for being with me. Thank you.